From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. 10 years ago, a fundraising campaign took over social media. It involved buckets of ice water, large sums of money, and one of humankind's most dreaded diseases.
Hi, everybody. This is Erica Flowers, editor-in-chief of Progress Illinois. I was nominated by my friend, J.D. Samper, to do the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge.
This is to raise awareness and support for the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. We were called out yesterday by ISU Police Department. We accepted that challenge.
Hi, I'm Mike Rocco, head baseball coach here at Assumption College. I've been nominated for the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge by my friend Kevin Field, and I'm accepting that challenge.
Hey everyone, we are here from Northern Illinois University. We are challenged to do the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge by Southern Illinois University, Carbondale.
So here goes.
3, 2, 1!
The ALS Ice Bucket Challenge raised millions and millions of dollars for research and treatment of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, or more simply, ALS. Given that it's been 10 years since those videos were everywhere, we thought it would be a good time to assess the effectiveness of that fundraiser and check in on the state of ALS research today. Josh Nuss is with the ALS Association, one of the main beneficiaries of the Ice Bucket Challenge. Josh, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can join our conversation today by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. What questions do you have about ALS and ALS research? Or what do you think of the Ice Bucket Challenge as a means of raising money? 800-222-9455 is the number. And I should add, we have a hard out at 30 minutes past the hour today. So if you want to call in, don't wait too long. 800-222-9455. All right, Josh, quite simply, I want to begin just with a sort of definition. Can you remind us, what is ALS?
Sure. Well, ALS, I guess the easiest way to explain ALS is it's a disease that keeps your brain from talking to your muscles. A person with ALS will lose the ability to walk, talk, eat, and eventually breathe. It's 100% fatal. It can strike anyone, anytime. It's emotionally, physically, financially devastating. And we need help, of course, to make this easier for families to live with ALS.
How common is it? How many people are afflicted in the U.S.?
Numbers vary, but I believe around 20 to 30,000 are affected across the country. The diagnosis for an ALS patient is about 2 to 5 years, and military veterans are actually twice as likely to develop ALS.
Huh. Do we know why that is yet?
We don't. There's a lot of research going into that, in the advocacy work that we do, a lot of theories around it, but no, as far as I know, we haven't figured that out yet.
All right. I wanted to give people a sense of what it can be like to live with or endure this disease. Brian and Sandra Wallach are Illinois residents. He has ALS. They've become advocates for greater access to experimental drugs. They're not with us today, but they've done some media in the past. I thought it would be worthwhile to hear from someone about what his life is like with this disease. This is from a report late last year that was on CBS Sunday Morning.
I have been progressing, but the good news is I'm still here.
How much has that extra time meant?
It's everything.
As ALS does, it's been slowly killing off the nerves that move Brian's muscles, including those for speech. So sometimes a smile and a wink will just have to do.
I'm really good at winking. That's true.
In case it's not clear from the audio there, in the video you can see that Brian is sort of mumbling and Sandra, his spouse, is sitting there holding his hand and kind of interpreting for him. So, Josh, what else can you tell us about what it's like day-to-day living with ALS?
Sure. You know, we always say if you've seen one case of ALS, you've seen one case of ALS. It's different in every single person that lives with the disease. Some people, it takes a little bit longer to get to diagnosis and their journey ends sooner than others. I've also seen some live with ALS for over 20 years. So everybody's journey is a little bit different, but the progression, there's a couple different ways it progresses through the body. Some It starts with more of the limbs, the legs, and the arms. Others, it's more of a bulbar effect, which means it affects their speech, their eating, and their breathing before it affects maybe their limbs. There are some people that have a slow progression, and you would, you know, see them on the street and you would have no idea that they're, you know, living with a terminal disease. So it is a little bit different in everybody. You know, the folks that are progressing, you know, it takes a lot of energy to get up and going throughout the day. Going to doctor's appointments can be exhausting. So to have a great caregiver is so important. We really emphasize that. And that is one thing we've seen is, you know, family, friends are always there to help folks. And they couldn't do without them. So we are so appreciative of our caregivers that care for people that they love living with ALS.
You mentioned the variance in progression and lifespan. I think Stephen Hawking is one of the more famous people who's had this disease, and he had it for decades, right?
Yeah, he did. You know, that's kind of, you know, sums it up right there. It's just different in everybody. And, you know, a lot of folks have different you know, trajectories of their ALS, and also different, you know, resources when it comes to whether it's the equipment that they have, whether it's assistive communication devices, breathing devices, power chairs, all those things to expand their life expectancy as well.
All right, let me remind people, this is the 21st show. We are talking with Josh Nuss, who is with the ALS Association, which was one of the main beneficiaries of the Ice Bucket Challenge, which happened, 10 years ago this summer. If you want to join us today, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Josh, this is what put this sort of back on our radar is this, you know, it was actually one of our producers saw his own Ice Bucket Challenge video on, I think it was on Facebook, one of those things where it, you know, reminds you of what you were doing 10 years ago on this day. So where did this Ice Bucket Challenge come from?
Yeah, it's crazy that it's been 10 years. It's gone fast. I actually started with the organization right after the Ice Bucket Challenge. So I saw it all happening as I was, you know, getting ready to start in position. So it was an exciting time to see ALS in the spotlight because it's a rare disease. So for folks to see a disease like ALS getting so much attention, it brought a lot of hope and a lot of awareness. So it started, like you said, 10 years ago in the summer of 2014, three young men living with ALS, Anthony Sinarchia, Pete Frades, and Pat Quinn, took the Ice Bucket Challenge. They launched the global phenomenon in their circles, you know, Boston College up in the New York area. They had a circle, and that circle just expanded. And then, as we all saw, it became, you know, the really popular thing to do was to challenge and get challenged. And it seemed like everybody was like, man, I haven't been challenged yet. When am I going to get challenged? And you're just waiting for your time to come so that you could be a part of this organic fundraiser that is something that's, you know, been unmatched, I guess, in the world of philanthropy. Over 17 million people around the world dumped cold water on their heads. It was just a crazy, crazy time. But it moved mountains in the fight against ALS.
Yeah. And you mentioned that one of the founders of this was Pat Quinn, not the Illinois governor. Although coincidentally, I mean, just as a sort of sense of how common and how for people maybe who are a little too young to remember it or just weren't plugged into social media, it was really everywhere at the time. We happen to have tape of Illinois Governor Pat Quinn doing his own version of the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Okay, hello everybody. I'm Governor Pat Quinn of the state of Illinois, and I'm taking the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. ALS is something that affects 5,600 Americans every year, and we have to find a cure, and we have to make sure that we raise awareness to this particular disease. And I want to thank Pat Quinn of Yonkers, New York, for coming up with the Ice Bucket Challenge. So without further ado,
all right. That is so cool.
All right, the other Pat Quinn involved in the Ice Bucket Challenge there. Josh, how much money did this generate?
It generated, so for the ALS Association, it generated over $115 million to support the mission. Funds were invested in research and to increase care for people living with ALS across the country.
Given that the association did not create this challenge. Was the ALS Association ready to get in this much money? I mean, it's sort of a known problem in charities, right? That when they get a windfall, are they prepared to spend it quickly enough? And yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd have to say no. And again, I wasn't with the organization at that time, but, you know, was you're getting a lot of media interviews from the, you know, the information that I gathered after I started. You're getting a lot of media interviews. You're getting a lot of people that want the association to come maybe film their challenge. A lot of, you know, government officials, schools, celebrities, things like that taking the challenge. So I'd say we probably weren't ready, but then, you know, once it started to happen, you know, everybody got together and we really worked with our local communities and our local volunteers to come up with a plan of how do we invest this money into our local communities to really drive progress in the fight against the disease.
So you mentioned that two of the ways the money has been used is for research and care. And I want to put a pin in care for now, but let's talk about research. What research advances have there been in the past decade?
Sure. So I kind of got a before and an after. Before the Ice Bucket Challenge, there was only one treatment that was available for people diagnosed with ALS. And since the Ice Bucket Challenge and today, there are two new treatments that have been approved by the FDA. Many are in the pipeline. I believe there are over 40 very promising projects in the pipeline in the research spectrum. And then as far as gene therapies as well, before the Ice Bucket Challenge, there were no gene therapies available as a treatment option. And in the last decade, at least 12 new ALS genes have been discovered. And the first treatment has actually been approved for a gene therapy. And we really want access to genetic testing and counseling to become more commonplace because it can help reduce time to diagnosis and gives people greater participation in those genetic trials. And I guess in forms of research as well, this kind of goes research and care. ALS clinics are a space where folks with ALS can go and see all of their doctors in one place. Because I mentioned ALS can be very exhausting to go to a number of appointments. ALS clinics are a spot where their OT, their PT, their neurologist, their dietitian, they're all there and they can kind of knock out all those appointments in one day. And before the Ice Bucket Challenge, we had 11 clinics across the country, and now we have 226. So, and clinics have been known to increase life expectancy and overall quality of life.
Is this something that people should be thinking? It's such a rare disease. Is it something people should be thinking about trying to prevent? Or I would guess most people are only diagnosed after they start experiencing symptoms that they can't otherwise explain. Talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, we've laid out a really pretty broad goal of trying to make ALS a livable disease for everyone, everywhere until we can cure it. And prevention is one of those things that was really never talked about before. And the ALS Association has really started talking about that, collaborating with other ALS organizations across the country to figure out and really work together to figure out how can we prevent ALS? What can you look for? How can we make it so that there are screenings done beforehand? If you think of, you know, screenings for different types of cancer and things like that, and when they tell you to start getting those, is that a point we can get to with ALS as well? The genetic part is such a small part. It's about a 5-10% of the population living with ALS is genetic. The rest is sporadic. So, you know, trying to find what causes it, what kind of factors cause it, that's where it all starts. And then the prevention piece and earlier diagnosis, sometimes it can take up to a year or more to get a formal diagnosis of ALS. And then by that time, it can have progressed so quickly that, you know, somebody could already be, you know, whether in a wheelchair or losing their speech, things like that. So earlier diagnosis is a big piece of this as well.
You know, you mentioned sporadic, I think, is the term you used. And there's so many diseases that we now at least have a sense of, okay, lung cancer frequently related to smoking or asbestosis or some other, you know, set of conditions. Liver disease could be, you know, related to alcohol consumption or other things like that. Is there anything we understand about what can spark ALS in people without that genetic connection?
You know, I think there's a lot of theories right now. We also have it'd be like a big database, I guess, or a registry where somebody who's diagnosed with ALS, it's a very exhaustive survey to kind of talk about their history, you know, are they in the military? You know, where do you live? You know, are you a farmer? Do you eat this, drink this, that kind of thing? There's a lot of questions, and we're trying to connect those dots. You'll see pockets of, you know, see a small town in, you know, rural Iowa that has six people that have been diagnosed with ALS in the last several years, things like that.
Huh.
Very confusing.
Yeah, I read Vermont is the state with the most prevalence, and just overall Midwest and New England sees more than other parts of the country.
Yeah. So you hear those stories and you start to think, are there environmental factors and things like that? And, you know, of course, me not being a scientist, I don't know much about those studies and things like that, but that is, you know, finding the cause and, you know, whether it could be several causes. And, you know, our hope is that making ALS livable through, whether it's through assistive technology, durable medical equipment, treatments to help folks live longer while we continue to look for a cure, because obviously it takes a long, long time, but we've made a lot of progress in the last 10 years, specifically because of, you know, the support from the Ice Bucket Challenge and the funds that are raised.
All right, we're going to talk a little more about this after the break, about 5 more minutes on the other side of the break. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. It's been 10 years since that Ice Bucket Challenge. Where is ALS? We're talking about that with Josh Nuss with the ALS Association. More to come here on the 21st show. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking with Josh Nuss of the ALS Association. 10 years after the summer of the Ice Bucket Challenge raised millions and millions of dollars for ALS research and care. About 5 minutes left in our time together. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. We did hear from a number of people in our texting group about this. I got to say, a little small sample size, so for what it's worth, but pretty kind of negative reaction from some people. Lex in Champaign and Helen in Springfield both said the Ice Bucket Challenge, things like that, are too dangerous. Josh, what about that? Does the ALS Association still host Ice Bucket Challenges?
No, we don't. You know, this, you know, it wasn't an ALS Association fundraiser. We were just kind of, like you said, one of the lucky beneficiaries of the dollars and folks thinking of us as the largest ALS organization in the country. So we were fortunate to get those funds and put them to good use. But right now, we more of urge folks just to kind of carry on the memory of the Ice Bucket Challenge, especially with being 10 years, sharing their old posts, things like that. We do have an event that we started up called the CEO Soak in different areas of the country where, you know, folks from companies will get involved and do an Ice Bucket Challenge, things like that. But, you know, if you look back at some of the videos from 10 years ago, you know, there were people taking Ice Bucket Challenges from water dumped out of a helicopter and things like that. And those weren't things that we, you know, asked them to do or anything like that. Right now, it's mostly just dumping, you know, a bucket of water on your head or somebody doing it for you, that kind of thing. But right now, it's really just, you know, paying homage to the Ice Bucket Challenging, honoring the memory of the three young men who started the organic phenomenon and carrying on their legacy, and then raising great awareness through the Ice Bucket Challenge. Because if a lot of times, you know, we say, hey, we work for the ALS Association, and folks will be like, what's that? And we say, remember the Ice Bucket Challenge? And they go, oh, yeah. And they kind of link those two together. So it kind of shows the impact that it had.
Yeah, our own Illinois governor, J.B. Pritzker, did a video where he was dressed up as Dr. Evil and had, you know, other people dressed up in a set and lighting. And that has been scrubbed from his YouTube page, for what that's worth. But I remember the headline on the Cranes article was something like, J.B. Pritzker's Ice Bucket Challenge video puts yours to shame. So it really did become this weirdly competitive thing too.
It was everybody was waiting to get challenged. And, you know, I'm located over here in the state of Iowa, and the Iowa Wild hockey team actually do it every August, and they take their Ice Bucket Challenge by Zamboni, which is just us sitting in front of the Zamboni. They dump water, it may hit your feet, some people get a little bit more in the back, things like that. But it's kind of a fun way of kicking things off too, and a different way of doing an Ice Bucket Challenge that's fun for everybody.
Yeah. We did get one text from Tommy in Urbana who asked, is it true that 20,000 people have ALS in the U.S.? And I'll interject to say, as we said earlier, 20, maybe 30,000 is a number I've seen. But back to Tommy's message. He says, 2,500 children die each year from gun-related injuries. Almost 50,000 folks die each year from the same cause. Thanks for that message, Tommy. Josh, I guess this gets to that question of, You know, you hear a lot about effective altruism. The way I read his question is suggesting, like, ALS, it's this terrible disease, and I have, you know, I have tremendous sympathy for those who are enduring it. I fear it myself. But what would you say to people who think, you know, maybe this money would be better spent on diseases that affect a greater number of people?
Yeah, you know, with ALS, you know, it's 100% fatal. If it were a chronic disease, there would be quite a few more people that are living with ALS. If you think of other diseases, whether it's cancer or cystic fibrosis or a muscular dystrophy or something like that, folks live with that disease quite a bit longer. With ALS being a 2 to 5 year diagnosis, folks are passing away quicker. If they live longer, it would be a much higher number of people that are living with the disease. So that's kind of probably how I would respond to that, even though it's
a rare
disease.
That's a good point. That's a good way to reframe it. Yeah.
It's a devastating disease of how it affects not just the person with ALS. I mean, it robs them of, you know, everything that they, you know, love doing, whether it's activities or things like that. But, it also affects the people around them. It's can cost up to $250,000 a year to live with ALS. So it is financially strapping as well. A lot of folks will have to quit their jobs and things like that. So it really becomes burdensome on the family as well, because many of the family members may have to also leave their job to care for the person, because in-home care is very expensive and hard to get, things like that. So there are a lot of other factors that go into it and affects not just the person, but the whole family.
Yeah. All right, Josh Nuss with the ALS Association, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me. And if anybody is looking for more information, you can go to ALS.org. If you want to learn more about the Ice Bucket Challenge, it's ALS.org/IBC to learn more about what we're doing with those funds. But thanks for having me.